Welcome to Discover Indie Film. I'm your host, Jeff Howard, and this is going to be a fun one, especially for me, because I have the team that made the short film Lucky that was at the Sherman Oaks Film Festival in 2021. I'll talk more about Lucky after I say their names. I've got Skylar Martin and Michael Hubel with me. Hey, you two.
Hi.
Hey, how's it going?
And when I say with me, I mean they're on my computer screen on Zoom, which means if you have a problem with the sound quality, I apologize. Blame Zoom, not us. Now I'm supposed to talk about Lucky. So I don't even know how to describe Lucky. I'll just say it's so fucking good. These two had to suffer through me at the Sherman Oaks Film Festival in 21, telling them how much I love their film. Like, I think at the mixer and then at the Q&A, like, I just, you know, no offense to anyone else, but it was kind of my favorite of the fest because it's just crazy original, crazy creative, just the spirit of it. As I recall, and I apologize if this is a spoiler, but I recall Michael saying, I just wanted to make a film where a guy showed up at a restaurant and brought his own silverware.
That is true. That is something that I wanted to sneak into something that I worked on at some point.
And yeah, and it's just, the whole thing is just so fantastic. So, oh, the excellent news. If people want to watch Lucky, they actually can in a very cool way. There is a new streaming service. Editor's note, every time I say Hi TV, I should have actually said TV Hi. The service has been rebranded. It is called TV Hi, as in watchtvhi.com, TVHI. And you can learn more about it on social media if you go to @watchtvhi. And that's always TVHI. Back to the podcast. That is a streaming service and or smart TV app. You can subscribe for $4.20 a month or $42 a year. But it's $4.20 a month because the stuff on Hi TV is wonderful films that you can watch in any state. But if you happen to be a responsible marijuana user, Hi TV is kind of intended for you. I have friends in recovery and I don't take marijuana lightly. Some people have problems. But if you don't have a problem with it and you can enjoy it in a healthy way, you should go to watchhivetv.com right now and type in the search field the word lucky, because you will feel very lucky after you see this film. That was a very shitty pun.
I was about to say 10 out of 10.
All right, so that's how people can see Lucky. And odds are at some point it'll hopefully join the Discover Indie Film TV series that was born out of this podcast. But I'll blab about that at the very end. So enough of me talking. I don't know which of you would love to go first, but this podcast is not just about your film. It's about your personal histories. Who wants to talk about how you got into film and filmmaking?
I'll start. I don't know. I just, anytime there was like a project in school or anything where there was an option to go the video route, I just always gravitated towards that and got a bunch of my friends in class and we would make some dumb shit. And usually got a passing grade, less for like whether or not there was educational content in it and more whether we'd put a lot more production value and like elbow grease into it. And the teachers usually liked that enough. And then, I don't know, then I went to college and was doing like other college stuff and then realized I could also be doing video stuff in college. And that was a lot more fun than, you know, writing papers and like doing lab assignments and stuff like that. So, after college, moved to LA, worked in entertainment, and met a lot more super fun creative people out here, like my co-director and co-writer, Skylar.
All right, Michael, I'm gonna turn into an interviewer though, because you were way too humble there, way too quick. So what part of the country were you growing up in?
North Carolina,
gotcha. Yep. And so you got involved. I love that you grew up in the era where you could do video projects for school. I actually do hear that from a lot of filmmakers. And, you know, I was from the era where like you had to shoot on film still, like the camcorder wasn't accessible yet. So I love to hear that you were able to express yourself creatively with cameras and stuff.
Yeah. I mean, that's something I haven't really considered much, but it is definitely an advantage of growing up in the mid 2000s, early 2010s for that kind of project. And that I had teachers who were cool and accepted that sort of stuff and made those avenues open. I had some really great teachers, some really great, digital media was a class I had in high school that I had a great teacher for that who pushed me, and let me kind of explore editing and filmmaking and, once again, just kind of doing dumb shit, but in a nurturing, educational way, you know, that has yielded the professional you see before you.
Excellent. And where'd you go to college?
University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill.
Oh, gotcha. So, and did you major in film or what'd you choose?
Yeah. So I did a double major in ancient and medieval history and film production. So with the, I guess we didn't really have a focus on like anything, but my thing in college was editing, and that was my main thing.
Oh, cool. And the medieval history, ancient medieval history, that's also kind of revealing. Not that there's anything medieval about your work that I know of, but I've only seen one
not
film.
Yet.
I'm sure there's other stuff.
Yeah.
But I think it definitely shows intellectual curiosity. I mean, I actually love history. I'm a fucking nerd who will read a history book while he's on vacation. But I was not into history in college. Like, I actually chose a major to avoid history prerequisites. So like, when I hear of someone who appreciated history as a young person, I think, okay, that's a good mind.
Thank you. I just thought it was fun and exciting. And, I don't know. There's when people have swords and stuff, you can't go wrong. That's when we talk about favorite films later, you'll see the ancient medieval history section coming out.
Excellent. All right. Well, fair enough. All right. So now I got you through college to LA. So I guess we can jump over to Skylar.
Yeah. So, my background is pretty different. I'm also from North Carolina and also went to Chapel Hill. I'll get that out of the way. We didn't really know each other or start working together at that time, but we are from different places in North Carolina. So I'm from a very, very small, like rural area where there was nothing to do. So I just watched TV constantly and sort of made it my entire personality. And I honestly, though, didn't even know that was a job that people, I kind of knew like celebrities existed, but I didn't know the opportunities in like indie and TV and film, you know, I just had no idea. So I went to college and studied journalism and got my degree in that. I did get a minor in also history and writing for the screen and stage. I had like a double minor, but I didn't really, sorry, I don't know. I just want to say for anyone listening, my dog is now barking in his sleep. So if you hear him on the podcast, that's my dog. He's a corgi mix. So don't blame him too much. He's really cute. But anyway, yeah. So I was not really sure I would do the film path. But I was sort of mentored by some really great professors who encouraged me to pursue writing. I definitely think of myself as sort of a writer versus like a filmmaker. Michael knows a lot of things about cameras and film, and I don't really know any of that. I can just write words, and that's kind of my specialty. Maybe directing, but even that I think is stemming from being confident in the writing of it and the creative. So yeah, that then we got out here. So now the stories right start to intertwine a little bit. We came out here, both of us, with this internship program that UNC had, and it placed, I was at a management company. I don't know what exactly you did when you were out here.
I think just like production company internship. It was unpaid.
Yeah,
unpaid internships should be illegal. That's my soapbox. That's it.
I appreciate your soapbox. People keep telling me that the festival should use unpaid interns, and I'm like, that doesn't feel right.
Yeah, it's. I think. For a festival, it would actually feel more okay than what we were doing, because we were doing like, it wasn't like a thing you could possibly be doing for fun. Like somebody could want to volunteer and help out a festival for fun because it's cool and you meet cool people. Nobody is like faxing things for fun. Like, that's not enjoyable.
For sure. For sure. Actually, I'm going to hone in on your story a little. So with the writing for stage and screen minor, I got that right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Were you writing screenplay, or did you try like writing movie scripts, and did you also write, you know, stage plays and things? Were you covering everything?
Yeah, I actually technically am a published playwright. Technically, it was a one act play, and it was part of like the school published a selection of plays from like this year to this year. So we did do some playwriting, which I really like. I want to get back into, but we did a little bit of everything. I was always more focused on TV, but I do have an extremely shitty feature about time travel that I wrote in college, so that exists. But yeah, it was a little bit of everything. It was a really fun minor. It was probably my favorite thing I like did at college in general.
For sure. And so the focus is writing, but like you said, you were very humble about directing and stuff. But I mean, I think I found, and I bet Michael's going to agree with me, that any writer who writes very clearly and visually, like, you can tell that they have a director's mind. Like, there's some scripts where you can see it's just, there's putting it out there, and then it's the film, the completed film isn't visualized. But some scripts you read, like, it is the blueprint. You can project it on the screen inside your head. And I bet those are the writers who make great directors.
Yeah. Yeah. And I do feel like I felt like directing felt pretty natural. I love working with actors, which I don't know if everyone would say that. I love working with actors on set, but I wouldn't say that directing is like my primary goal, I guess, but I do like it. I would like to do it again. Lucky was the first thing I ever directed. So it's kind of just winging it for that one.
For sure. All right. So you're both come out to LA on these internships, and then you choose to stay, or did that was like during a summer and you went back and graduated and then moved back here?
So that was post-graduation. So, well, I did actually come here between junior and senior year. I came out and did an internship at AFI with the directing workshop for women, which was really incredible. I was just working as a PA on a lot of these amazing women's films. But after that, yeah, the internship that the program we both did was one that was post-graduation. So a lot of people leave after their internship, but we stayed. We're actually different years, so we weren't in this internship like program together. I'm a year above Michael. So we just sort of met then through like mutual friends, and of course had to get real jobs that paid us. So that sort of came next, I guess.
Right. So separately, a year apart. So I guess I have to ask, when you encountered each other, or were there indie film related projects that either of you worked on before you encountered each other?
Well, I'd warrant that like the way we really became friends was by working on projects and stuff, because one of the things that the internship program really encouraged, and I think the real strengths of it, is that it encouraged the people who were coming out here who were serious about being in the film industry and like doing all this stuff to, you know, use the connections and resources of each other and use the alumni network and the fact that, you know, young have a lot of energy, a lot of ideas, fresh out of college, everyone's poor as fuck. So you just like, you grab your friends, and if you want to make stuff, you can make stuff, and you've got people who are ready and willing to like join you on some insanity. And that's, I'd say, how we like became real friends, was working on other short films that other of our friends directed or came up with, some of whom, well, actually Chris, who plays Judd in Lucky.
Yeah. The way
we officially met, cause she was running casting for a short film that he directed, and me and my buddy Aaron, who was the DP on Lucky, both came out to help them run the casting session. And that was probably the first time we all hung out here.
Yeah. I produced that. I didn't just run casting, but
I'm talking about when we met.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. No, that you guys were doing the whole cast. You were doing the audition process.
Yeah. So yeah, I guess I forgot. Did you guys not work on that film?
We did later, but the first thing we did was like Aaron and I sat at the end of Chris's driveway just to make it look more official, I think.
And direct the
actors. Yeah, and we ushered the actors in with like a fucking clipboard or something.
Yeah.
And then we ended up, he was like, hey, you want to come back and like help me make it? And we're like, okay.
Yeah, we worked on that one. And then that same group worked together on, do you want to take the lead for The Penis Between Us?
Oh, would I? Our Smash web series, The Penis Between Us, that we made 5 episodes of this web series about 3 male roommates who only have 1 penis between the 3 of them. It is never explained how this mechanically works.
It's a mockumentary.
Oh yeah, it's a mockumentary. It goes more like a kind of sitcom-y route with that as like the gimmick.
I'm going to demand to get a link to this, like, as soon as this Zoom is over. I cannot tell you how up my alley that sense of humor is.
I honestly feel like, yeah, you're going to appreciate it. I think you're going to like it. We're proud of it. Michael wrote it and directed, and I did not that much on it, but I was involved. I just wasn't like,
that's also not,
I wasn't involved in the credit. Like if you look at the credits, you'd be like, she didn't do shit, but I was involved.
There's the story by, this is how Skylar and I started working more closely together, because I realized I wasn't actually a very like intuitive writer in terms of creating cohesive stories and stuff like that. Which obviously Lucky still carries a lot of that over.
I would say Lucky has more of Michael's creative spirit in it than mine. I'm a much more structured writer usually, which is probably good when we work together, because we kind of opposites, but
yeah. But yeah, so we worked together a lot on The Penis Between Us, and you can see a noticeable shift over the 5 episodes should you watch it, as more of Skylar's influence turns it into an actual cohesive TV series and less of like this weird, strange little fever dream. So that was probably that was the next thing we worked on.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah.
Lucky, right?
Yeah.
And isn't it a beautiful period of time though, where you're, you know, pretty recently out of college and, you know, life is not too expensive and everyone can help each other out. And like, it is a great era, I think, in life.
Yeah. It's great too, because then you run into this problem and we're involved in it too, where like the longer people are out here, the more professional they are, the more nobody can set the time aside. Right. It's like, I'm working in writer's rooms. I don't like, it's hard then to set the time aside. But when everybody first gets out here, they're just working some shitty assistant job. They're like, let's just make everything. And it's super fun to do that. It gets harder and harder to carve out the time for that.
For sure. And harder to put time into stuff where you're just helping a friend for free, because you're like, sorry, I got to do the stuff that pays the rent and puts food on in the belly. Right. So
yeah,
very cool. So, a couple, so various projects in the friend group happen, and then The Penis Between Us happens, and then Lucky comes next.
I think so. I'm like, did it?
Yeah. It was sort of prompted by.
Wait. I'm probably letting you guys off the hook too easily. Or do you not want to talk about like the jobs that you you've done?
Like about our jobs. Yeah.
Yeah. Because like, I assume the jobs came in too.
Yeah. Do you want the history of the jobs or where we are now?
Oh, you feel free to. You're a natural storyteller.
The history is not that interesting, but I started it probably like a bunch of people who would be listening to this started at an assistant at a talent agency. Fucking hated it and was there for a year and a half to get the like year of agency experience. I jumped to a production company. And then actually kind of right away started writing commercial treatments for them. So I got really lucky that kind of early on out here, I was making money as a writer, though I didn't really feel like a writer because I was writing commercial. Like I wasn't even writing commercials. I was writing pitches for commercials, essentially ghostwriting for directors. So it was like a weird subgenre of writing that I didn't even feel like that legitimized by. But yeah,
well, I apologize for interrupting, but that is still getting paid.
That's true.
To put words together.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people who walk around Los Angeles and the rest of the world calling themselves writer, who have not gotten even a dollar from their grandma for something they wrote. So I'm giving you a golf clap for that.
Thank you.
That you were able to do it. Because also a lot of people can be, right? They'll be like, oh, I don't want to do that. You know, like you were willing to pay some dues.
Yeah, for sure. So I still do that every now and then. I've got like some directors that I still work with on a freelance basis. When I went from there, I was working for a TV writer for a long time, and his wife, she was a manager. So I was working for both of them. They were really great. And then I finally got into what I wanted to do, which was I was on a writer's room as the writer's assistant. I was on Virgin River on Netflix on the fifth season. And that was like, I guess last year. Yeah, basically. And then right now I am the script coordinator on actually another Netflix show. I just keep like now jumping from Netflix, but it is, it's an upcoming Western. Kurt Sutter did Sons of Anarchy. It's his new show.
Excellent. I mean, for anyone listening who doesn't know this, not everyone knows this, but the writer's assistant job is especially on TV series, is the most coveted job for an aspiring writer in Los Angeles.
Yeah. I was really, really thrilled to get it. I had been trying to get in the writer's room in like any capacity. And I really thought I would have to do the writer's PA job first. Cause you know, there's kind of a stepping stone. You kind of go writer's PA, writer's assistant, and then script coordinator sort of up there, but it's kind of like its own thing a little bit. But I got really lucky, and the showrunner on Virgin River, we just kind of hit it off. He was friends with my previous boss, so we kind of had mutual friends. So I kind of got to skip the writer's PA position, which was really cool, and like jump right into it.
And hey, I'm going to assume why I hear from a lot of people who have been around for a while that, you know, as much as streaming has caused disruptions and stuff, I think there's way more TV being made than ever. So it's wonderful that it's creating opportunities for writers to get into writers' rooms and get started.
Yeah, I've exclusively worked on streamers. Even like the writer that I worked for before, he was pretty much exclusively writing on streamers. So I feel like, they're scary. It's kind of scary out there with the kind of, they're pulling stuff, they're canceling stuff before it comes out. Like, kind of a dark joke around the office, like if our Wi-Fi goes out or something, we're like, we got canceled, and it's a joke for now, you never know. But it is great. Like, we're lucky that there is a lot more TV coming out.
Yeah, and the quality is higher than ever.
I totally agree. Yeah,
excellent. All right, so bravo. So it's great to hear. So that's awesome. So you, and hey, I'm gonna give you an extra golf clap. It's so funny. This is a podcast, and I never share the video with anyone ever. But like on Zoom, I'm giving Skylar a golf clap, like a silent golf clap, because you're using your degree.
Kind of, yeah. Well,
I know so few people who actually. I don't use mine. Well, maybe I use mine, but yeah. Like you got a degree in stage and screenwriting, and here you are like working as the story analyst on a series. So that's rad.
Thank you.
I'm going to shift over to Michael. So what were your jobs in this crazy industry like?
So when I first came out, I did those unpaid internships and was rapidly hemorrhaging money and desperately in need of help. And one of my friends was in a position where he could hire for a gear room. So I went and worked in a gear room doing camera rentals and stuff like that. And always trying to like butt into post at the earliest opportunity. And one day the lead AE at the company had to come out of town for something. And I'd already been talking to him and had expressed interest. So he was like, hey, I got to leave for a week. Do you want to come cover the desk? And I said, I would love to. So I went over and kind of muscled my way into post that way. And also skipped the post PA process too and went straight to AEing.
Yeah. Which is assistant editor for people.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
And then quickly realized that like the way that I edited in college was nowhere close to as organized or as detailed or as professional as like what actually happens out here. So had a quick trial by fire where I relearned everything about editing and post and everything. And I've been doing post ever since. So
yeah, because assistant editor, that's a stressful job, right? Because you're importing stuff, you're cataloging it and you're organizing it so that an editor can do their job, right?
Yeah, it definitely depends. Depends on the editors, what they want, depends on the project, how much or how little is involved. So I've done as little as just ingest, create a string out, editors go to town. I've done rough assemblies where the editor comes in to polish, and it can all be lumped under assistant editor. So, you know, it's a versatile job. It's been quite rewarding, and I still do AE, but I've now been taking more edit jobs as I've gotten more stuff under the belt and more on the resume. So, once I got out of, I went and worked with Viacom for a while, and then during COVID struck out and did freelance. So I've been doing shows for Hulu and HBO and increasingly a lot of like live music events. So I've been doing a lot of big, you know, 30, 40 camera, multicam, stuff like that. And now I just got back from Sundance where I was the assistant editor for the Sundance video content team. So that was a hoot and a holler. And also I was like, I much prefer fun local film festivals because that was stressful and there were way too many celebrities there. So, that's my, go to the Sherman Oaks Film Festival if you are in the area, cause it was a fun, wonderful festival experience.
Yeah. You can say you've been to both Sundance and the Sherman Oaks Film Festival and you prefer.
I had more fun at Sherman Oaks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Personally. I'm
well,
sure
I appreciate that.
Pilots may vary, but I had more fun at Sherman Oaks.
I mean, yeah, clearly if someone's a star fucker, they'll be a little disappointed at Sherman Oaks. But if they love film, oh man, I'm just going to say it. The films are even better at Sherman Oaks. I've never been a big fan of what I've seen at Sundance. But what can I say? I'm a small, petty person. But I was going to add that the editing thing, I think you might... I'm just going to say something and see if you back me up, which is there might be no better education on directing than being an AE, because you're seeing all the coverage these directors are doing. You're seeing all the choices, you know, you're seeing so much of how the film was directed and then put together by an editor. I think it's almost more insightful than being an AD, because you're really just, you're seeing all the footage that's done on a film set, which, or TV set, which is huge.
Yeah. And seeing how much of it gets scrapped or, you know, how much doesn't, like, I think, Scott and I have talked about this, but I think one of the things, I guess if this is a natural segue to Lucky, like one of the things that really helped us as co-directors was her with the stronger writing background, and better people skills
for
working with the actors. Yeah. and me with a stronger like, I don't know,
technical background.
Yeah, technical visual, like with the editing, like we could like look at the shot list and be like, all right, we've got 3 days to shoot this thing. Like, we can't just cover everything. We have one nice camera, we're not gonna multicam it, we've got all this stuff. And so having the editing background, knowing how much gets cut, knowing how many angles never get seen, we were able to like really pare down, have a tight shot list, and a tight storyboard, and go from there. So I think both of our skill sets really complemented each other, like you said, to make a lean production team.
Which I'll add for anyone who hasn't seen it, and I assume hopefully everyone's rushing to see it right now, But Lucky is not a small short. You might, like you were saying, it's 7-8 minutes. Before we started recording, you were talking about how it's 7-8 minutes. But I mean, there's a lot of locations. There's a lot of looks. It's an ambitious film. And So the fact that you, your editing skills let you streamline that ambition, that's probably how you were able to get it done, I would assume.
Well, we called in a lot of favors.
a lot of favors.
Like, well, I think the, and correct me if I'm wrong, Michael, but I'm pretty sure that part of what Michael wanted to do with this short originally was make something that was like, we could really boost the production value with like smart, clever editing. So we kind of factored things like that in. Like, there are a lot of things in Lucky that look even bigger than they are because Michael was able to like do stuff in post. I don't know what people do in post, you know, fix it in post. But we also called in like a lot of, I'm pretty sure there are some locations in there that we like, our friends like never actually fully got permission for us to use. We just kind of snuck in and like they, we did it. We'll not disclose what they were, but
there was
a lot of favors called in, and a lot of people on that production are like professionals, especially now. We have a lot of friends who are professionals at what they do. And we were just like, please, please, will you work on it? And like Lincoln.
Yeah.
Who did, yeah. We have some like high up friends in that crew.
And fortunately they were all very generous and willing to lend their time and talents and energies to make what is objectively a very strange, unmarketable script into a very strange, unmarketable reality. So
a strange, unmarketable film. And yet, I just want to add that, so now that I know about your editing background and Skylar's writing background and both your writing backgrounds, it all kind of comes together, because I think one, it's almost a film made for filmmakers and creatives in a way, because you, there's so, so much of what, I apologize for my language, but like what gives me a film boner for it is the editing, is the way transitions just happen. And we go from one moment to another and it completely breaks the laws of reality and works. Like, I would be amazed if someone could write something like that and envision something like that and shoot it, if they hadn't spent so much time editing that they realized, you can go from daytime in the desert to the person just walks right into, now it's nighttime in a restaurant and you don't have to explain it. And they just went, you know, went through a film wormhole and came out somewhere completely different. And it just ties together beautifully. Like, if you know what you're doing. So,
but you're gonna love some of that was like some true indie magic, because some of that was actually the fact that we had packed so much into our day at one of our locations that we lost the light and we were like, fuck, like, what are we going to do? And then I don't even remember which one of us, who it was, one of us or both of us were just like, let's just like make it dark and see what happens. It's like, now it's nighttime. And so, but then we, and that was just desperation, because we were like, well, we're not going to get the location again. We got to get this. So whatever. And then we did it, and it was actually so awesome and like scary and weird. But at least one of those was happenstance. The other ones were scripted, but
it was the restaurant one. It was the coming back from the Patricia John kitchen scene.
Yeah, when it's just suddenly night at the restaurant. Back.
We had to send all our extras home because they were just sitting around bored as hell. And we were like, we feel really bad. We've run out of crafty. Please go home. Now it'll be a dark, creepy, empty restaurant. And it did work. And it could not have worked, I hazard, in anything other than something as weird and disjointed as Lucky.
Thank God we made such a zany film, because any little mistake we made on set, we were like, well, it'll probably just make it weirder.
Yeah, there were some big flubs that I think sold okay, given the nature of the genre.
I would think so, for sure. All right, and you both kind of addressed the co-directing thing. I mean, so the co-writing, sounds like the writing phase was pretty enjoyable.
It actually was. We started at a bar, as you might expect.
We were originally working on something that was much more structured and cerebral, and kind of the only thing that was in this original idea that made it into Lucky was the idea of this like interdimensional bar where like space and time don't really exist. But we were trying to write this kind of serious version, and I think there was like maybe a date, a love story, but it was like very not weird. It was like a just sci-fi, grounded kind of weird sci-fi. But I think we were kind of just like drinking more and more as we were talking about it, and we couldn't crack the story, and we were getting so frustrated. And we just started getting, our pitches started getting weirder and weirder. And eventually it turned into like Lucky. And Michael had like some previous characters that he used to, I don't know, used to write these weird little stories with them, right?
Yeah, no, John and Patricia have existed in several other iterations. And so when we didn't have any like readily available names, I was like, oh, I'm just going to put in John and Patricia because these are two characters I've written before, and then we'll change it later. And we did not. And dear reader, we did not change them. But I have to say that like the John and Patricia and Lucky, thanks in no small part to, well, obviously the creative addition of Skylar, and then our actors who came to the table when we did our first table read. Our actor playing John, a very talented man named John Bradford, came in and turned his script over, our silly little script, and he had a full page of handwritten notes about character motivation and like the scare of responsibility with oncoming fatherhood and all this stuff. And we were both like,
yeah, he had thought so deeply about it and had like ascribed these beautiful themes like to the film that we just didn't really have. Like we did have a theme, but we didn't have that theme. And he told us ours, and I was like, oh, that's better. Let's go with that. Yeah, it's about fatherhood. Because we were like, oh, it's about conflict and like how conflict is important in relationships, which I'm kind of like, are we projecting? Like, why did we think that was the theme of it? That's weird. But he and Lacey, who played our lead, like the female lead, she also did that. She also came in and had all these like beautiful ideas about it. And we were like, man, like these are professionals. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
But also you gave them, I'm just going to throw it back to you two, which is you gave them something with enough meat that they could extrapolate things. Like, I'm sure this, if you gave those two a really boring thing about a married couple sitting at a restaurant discussing, you know, the babysitter, like neither of them would have bothered. Like, but you gave them something that inspired them to look deeper into it.
Yeah. And I think making it so like kind of vague, and it can mean something different to everyone. Cause we've had all kinds of like, is it about this? Is it about this? And it really is one of those things where it's like, hey man, it's like about whatever you want it to be. So that's why it's on high TV. It's like, hey, what do you want it to be about? It is that.
Yeah.
And there is actually nothing cooler than when we're having a Q&A at a festival and someone raises a hand and says, is this what the film means? And the director goes, it is now. I love that.
Yeah.
I'll go with that.
Because that's how it's you can have all the meaning in the world and your intention can be whatever. But if you put that out there and people get something different out of it, like, that's what it is. That's what they got out of it.
And I think that's what makes it so appealing to you, because like, I mean, we've used so many adjectives, but life is really fuzzy and the human mind, everyone think like, just take memory, like shoot video of an evening. And then 5 years later, write down your memories and then watch the video and you'll see you are completely wrong about everything. All our perceptions, life is just perception. It's not reality. So obviously that's why I dig a film about a surreal bar that exists outside of time and space.
Yeah. It makes it, I think
that's where we all exist. We're actually not in time and space. We're just like, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was going to say,
pretty cool.
Jumping back, getting the feet back on the ground a little, you did make references, I think, to how you co-directed together. Did you just sort of naturally divide and conquer the tasks, or did you do certain things together and certain things you just took the lead, each of you chose to take the lead on?
Yeah, I think we sort of planned to approach it a certain way. And then again, the nature of like indie short filmmaking meant that we sort of had no choice but to divide and conquer, because this was definitely the biggest crew we've ever dealt with on any kind of short or like web series. I mean, it was a big, like legit crew of people that were there. And of course, they're running around wanting to know stuff. So we kind of just, it naturally ended up being a divide and conquer. And like our friend Aaron, who was the DP, was hugely helpful too, because he ended up essentially having to like be the first AD and like keeping us together, even though he was, you know, the DP as well. But so it kind of, it often ended up with Michael dealing a little bit more with Aaron and like, again, like the more technical side of things, and me working with the actors and like talking them through and running things with them. And then we would, you know, jump off and talk to wardrobe. So it just sort of naturally was divided. I feel like we didn't actually even get the chance to interact that much when we were on set, because it was kind of like we would meet up, quick discuss something, and then run and each deal with different things.
Yeah, and then just go back to the monitor every time we shot and watch the playback. But I quickly realized that anytime I talked to the actors on set, like even like we did all these script reads and all this stuff, and I was feeling good about it. And then we got to set, and I would try to tell the actors like what I wanted from another take, and they would just like look at me like I had grown a third eye. And Skylar would say it like different, but in a way that made sense to them. And they'd be like, oh yeah, totally nailed it. And I was like, all right, Skylar, I am not good at this.
I know.
You're on actor duty now.
I speak actor very well, apparently. And it is a language Michael is less familiar with.
Well, I just don't think I articulated anything I wanted, but I think I would just be like, well, can you do it different? And they'd be like, but how?
Yeah,
be like, we need emotion here, and like just way more buttoned up and wrapped up than I am. So,
well, to help too, that like I know Michael well enough and like his creative sensibilities that he would say that nonsense, and I'd be like, oh, yes, he would like you to play this more as if you're feeling disappointed by like the loss of your what, you know, like I could tell what he wanted, but they couldn't, not all the time, but
yeah, well, and you two had carried this thing from the beginning together. So yeah, you could understand each other. You were on the same page, and you sort of, even with your separate skills and your separate ways of communicating, it's great that you could interpret, you knew exactly what Michael meant because you guys had made this thing from the beginning. So.
And even day of, we obviously, you always add more stuff on the fly, but I think one of the, I'm a big proponent of co-directing, co-writing, co-everything, because I think it just always makes something stronger to have. I mean, sure, the unifying vision and stuff, but like it's always just so much more helpful to have more creative angles, because someone's always going to see something differently than you do, or have an idea that maybe doesn't strike you at first. But once again, you get to the editing process, and then you've got that take where she said, why don't you try it surprised this time? And like, I was like, well, why would she be surprised? But it didn't matter. We got the surprise take. And then later down in the edit, it was like, man, this surprised take is looking real good right now, now that we've come down to brass tacks.
It was fun during the edit to get like little wins. Like both of us would. Like there would be a time where he'd be like, I told you this would be better. And I'd be like, yeah, no, it's better. So it was like, because it was great because we were making the film better, but also we got some little wins like here and there.
Yeah, there were each of us got a couple like gimmies where we could just put our foot down and be like, I'm sorry, this is one that I'm calling in the trump card, and I'm gonna put my foot down on this. And I think it was made all the better for it, and for the two heads better.
I'm with you 1,000%. In fact, I for many years I was a judge in a screenwriting competition, and I think if there were two names on that title page instead of one, it was almost always a better work. Because it just, you know, as much as collaboration is challenging, like you said, two minds are better than one. And two directors are, you know, for years people pretended that there should only be one director, but like the Coen brothers co-directed, but it wasn't acceptable. So they, you know, Joel called himself producer and Ethan, I mean, Joel called himself director and Ethan called himself producer, but they co-directed everything. Like it's just clear that there's benefits. And like you said, you could divide and conquer too. So your day was less shitty.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot of work. It turns out filmmaking is a lot of work. And it was way nicer to, I mean, have both of us working on it, because it was less overwhelming. And not to just keep bringing up the crew and stuff, but we had just such an amazing crew of people like, Aaron, our DP, wore a lot of hats. Chris, our actor who plays Judd, was also producing and working with the set deck. And like everybody was just like in true, I guess, indie filmmaking fashion. Everybody was wearing a lot of hats and really busting ass. And it was just a feat of many hands.
For sure. And I imagine a fairly quick shoot.
Yeah, it was supposed to be 2 days, and then we realized our opening desert footage was too shitty, so we went back and shot a third day and made John drink a lot more apple juice.
Yeah, that whiskey he was drinking. He had to drink a lot of that, but yeah, so it was quick though, because it was basically a long weekend.
Yeah.
Long weekend, and then well, I don't think I have to ask who cut it.
It was all Skylar.
It was Michael.
And I really dragged my feet. But once again, having Skylar as the co-director meant that she was going, hey, when are you going to finish?
Yeah, thing that is convenient about our partnership is that I am really great with deadlines and not a procrastinator. And Michael is a huge procrastinator. So.
And horrible with deadlines. So, you know. We both have our strengths.
For sure. And you could, you know, assemble something and cut it together and work on it and then show it to your co-director and discuss it and then dive back in. So yeah, it makes perfect sense. And I assume because I love the way the film turned out, I'm assuming that the editing process was fun as you saw it, like came together as you planned or better than you planned.
Yeah, honestly, well, I think the happiest accident was how well the night shift worked from our make do, you know, kind of on the fly decision. But then it once we had the assembly and it was like, you know, a cut, that's when it was fun for me to go in and like start messing with stuff and start, you know, just like, what if we do this? The thing that was the biggest pain was probably all the masking for the kitchen scene where John and there was a lot of masking because we had the double John and we had the double John and Patricia scene. So a lot of that was just like really boring and I put it off for a while because it was pretty tedious. But once I realized that, you know, we needed to finish it and it got done, then those pieces, the fact that we shot it with the mind for the edit to make any of that stuff possible, I think it really paid off when we got to see the finished product and like that stuff worked. Cause that was also just like a fun, like, oh, thank goodness this worked. Cause we would have been fucked if it didn't, you know, it all hinges on that stuff being able to actually like sell. And then, yeah, we get to do the fun little effects and just the tweaks that make it that much more unsettling for certain parts. Sound design, we had a great sound designer come in and work on it and add just that extra layer of texture and oomph to sell the whole thing.
For sure. I mean, I'll add that anyone who watches it is going to walk away, is going to be impressed with the technical quality of it. I mean, because the way we're talking, you know, you make it sound like we just threw it together, but it looks fantastic. I mean, it's a really technically, like, and I guess I'm bringing along my baggage of as a festival programmer, I see the whole gamut from super polished work to super raw work. And I mean, I think Lucky is one of those things that has the feel of raw while being technically solid.
That's great. That's what we were aiming for. I mean, it's because even though I would say like the act of making it felt like very indie, very raw work, whatever. The important thing that at the end of the day is that like all the people who were pitching in to do it for the most part are professionals at each of their independent tasks. So it still ended up coming out looking polished and professional because even though we were all running around with like chickens with our heads cut off, like a little bit on set, these were still like, you know, a professional editor running around that way. So it was still easier to, I think, bring it all together in the end.
Yeah. And honestly, it was, like you said, professionally, you know, the DP, the director of photography was fantastic. And the direction was fantastic. I mean, I'm not going to name a film, but I just watched a short today where like like the cuts were like it goes from one character to another and it's off. And you're just like, well, you know, if you're going to give me this, then you have to have the best story I've ever seen.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, well, that's just the kind of stuff too, that like eye lines and that kind of thing. That was something Michael was super cognizant of because of his editing background. He was like, oh, this eye line is off. And that's probably something that I would have not even really thought about, but he was very specific with that kind of thing, which was great.
In fact, that's probably what I'm talking about when I, besides the look of it, is yeah, eye lines, is all that technical stuff is so polished and so good in this film. And, you know, like you're saying, a film about interdimensional space can be, you know, maybe not have attention to detail, but it does. So more golf claps.
We're very thankful and honored that so many people worked on it, that it's had such a good reception from others, and especially yourself. You've been a huge champion of Lucky. So.
I'm a fan, and that's right. I'm actually looking at the notes from Sherman Oaks Film Festival, and we had your LA premiere.
Yeah.
How cool is that? And you live really close to the theater, right?
Oh yeah, we've actually moved, but we moved 1 mile down the road. So we lived right on like right on Magnolia. So basically just farther down.
So cool. So cool to have an amazingly great film from people who are like locals to the community. We don't actually give, I know you're supposed to give a bonus, like a little bump to the locals when you're the selection committee is doing their job. But you know, Sherman Oaks is all, we're just about quality. So, you know, if a great film is from Belgium, fine. We got a film from Belgium that won't put any asses in the seats. Sorry.
No, I think that, but that makes it, that's what's so fun about it. That's like why we had such a good time. Cause we went to other nights that weren't just the night that our film was screening, and like saw such awesome stuff. And without naming any other festivals, like we watched content from other festivals that we got into and like didn't have that experience with all of them. So we've seen enough film festivals to be able to speak about Sherman Oaks and say like it really is a great one.
There really is no, we don't have a word in English for the feeling of seeing your work and like being honored that you've been selected. In a way, it's always an honor to be selected by a festival. And then you, when you go to the festival and they show your film in a block with crappy films, all of a sudden that feeling of being on, you're like, well, should I feel good about, like, you know, there isn't a word to describe that.
It's like uncomfortable and like sort of guilty and sort of like, we're a little flattered, but also like, wait, what does this say about me? Hold on.
Yeah. And yeah, it's like, I guess it's that feeling where, you know, if you're at a singles bar and someone says, oh, you have the most beautiful eyes. And then they look at somebody who like, and then they tell someone else, oh, you have beautiful eyes. I'm like, I guess my eyes really aren't that beautiful because you have no taste.
Well, I think the other thing that, I mean, maybe less about the, like, whether or not other films are bad, but one of the things I really appreciated was that, like, everybody there was coming together and like had seemed to share the same passion. Cause I think one of my bigger turnoffs from other festivals was people all shuffle in for their screening. They watch their screening, they shuffle out for their screening. Then the next film plays and a new crowd shuffles in, and there was no cohesion. There was no actually exploring other stuff or other films or meeting other people or any of the kind of like collaborative, stuff I want from a film festival. It was all very like kind of just about them at the moment, and then they're out because their time is over. And I really appreciated that the Sherman Oaks Film Festival was not like that and did foster communication between other filmmaking teams and dialogue and with the opening mixer and the closing mixer and all the various nights. So.
We try to foster, but the truth is a lot of people do what you just described. And I got to admit, I cannot wrap my brain around, if you've put the time and effort it takes to make a film, how do you not love filmmaking so much that you want to see as much other stuff as you can, like work into your schedule. Like he, I get it. People have lives, but you know, there's a 7 PM and an 8:30 and a 10, like four nights in a row during the week. And it's like, how can you not come to the 8:30 after work and just see what's out there? I mean, if you're making films, I just don't understand why everyone isn't like you two.
Neither do we.
Neither do we. And I assume, you got many more festivals under your belt now?
I don't know how many we ended up like
attending.
Yeah. We got in a fair amount. But
yeah, well, that's more what I meant. I mean, you can't always travel, especially when you have jobs.
Well, and a lot of them, we were kind of like in that sort of COVID, post-COVID sort of things had just started coming back. And so a lot of things that even would have been in person, we're still doing it online only. So we kind of got a lot of online ones. But yeah, it got into a fair number. I don't even remember how many exactly, just because like a lot of them were those online ones that we were like, yay, cool. But that was kind of the extent of it. And we would like watch some other ones that were streaming, but didn't really get the community aspect of it at all.
You just reminded me, I guess I shut it out of my mind that November 2021, that was the festival. That was our first one after COVID where it was mask required and vaccination required. And pretty much, I guess that's why we were your LA premiere, because because there was many it was pretty fresh. I'm forgetting just how stressful, and like I was going to that festival every night thinking to myself, I'm gonna go home from this thing with COVID, man. I believe it was 8 nights because we had so much stuff submitted that we went Sunday to Sunday 8 nights, because there was just so many great films submitted because so many people held back till COVID was over.
That's exactly what we did. Yeah, we were in that boat too, because this is part of why, like, I can't remember everything about our whole process with Lucky, because we worked on it a really long time ago. Because it was, even when we were in the film festival, we had worked on it a long time before that. And then COVID happened, and then we held it. We
shot it before COVID, and then, like I said, I'm a very slow tinkerer and editor when left to my own devices. So I kind of just fiddled with it for a while.
I finally had to be like, it's done. It is done. No more changes. Because I think Michael would have tinkered with it forever. We were finally like, no, it's time. We're submitting it to things.
Yeah.
The world needs to see it now.
Yeah. Which is fair. I get it. Yeah. So really, you shot it before COVID. You probably finished it sometime during 2020, I guess. And then waited out the storm until.
No, I was definitely still. I didn't finish the final pass till March of 2021, I don't think.
Well, I
March.
Guess. But at the same time, COVID was happening. So we were kind of like, well, we don't need to finish this.
Yeah, there were like, big things happening. I'll give myself a little pass on like.
I'm not going to be able to really submit it anyway right now. So we might as well let Michael take his sweet time.
For sure.
But it worked out.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And then, as 2021 progressed, we managed to get public events back. It was something else. Believe me, as a festival programmer, I was both delighted to be back in the theater and also like, oh man, I have to leave home. Like, I got pretty used to staying home.
Oh, we did too. We definitely did too.
And cool. And what have you been working on since Lucky? Or has it been all the jobs, or is there another script brewing?
Well, I've been writing. I've been trying to push Michael to get some of his own scripts done, but I finished the pilot. I actually have a script in a feature in development with a director attached now, which is exciting. So we're doing rewrites on that. We are working on some stuff together, but like sort of tentatively, like at the moment, we're just sort of brainstorming them. So they're early stages, but we just like a couple nights ago sat down and kind of plotted out a short, actually, because Michael's especially really jonesing to like get back on set.
Yeah, I am. I will say, like, that part of Sundance was very, very inspiring. Like, seeing how many cool, like, having not been, actually, that's the first film festival I've been to since Sherman Oaks Film Festival. And it was just so invigorating to be back surrounded by filmmakers and people excited about film and seeing stuff live and all that, you know, gushy shit, that I came back just like, I've got to make something this year. We got to get the boys back together, get the team Avengers Assemble, you know, do the whole shenanigans again. So we're working on some stuff. I am dithering on some pilots, and some other shorts and stuff, but yeah, I think 2023, we're going to make something new. It's high time.
You know, I'm going to laugh at myself because we're talking on the last day of January of 2023. When you said 2023, I was like, next year? Apparently, I don't know what year it is. But yeah, excellent. Well, and you have a great situation because you can bounce, you know, you can just keep workshopping ideas until you find one that's so good you have to do it, right?
Yeah, I think that's kind of where we're at right now because we're like running down the list. I think we... I want to do horror, I think, more like not traditional per se, but like a little less art house, a little bit more proof of concept for a feature. Cause I'm thinking that, I mean, you never make these things to make money, but in the horror world, there are a fair amount of shorts that become features and we're both writers. We could easily punch out a feature if we needed to, if anybody wanted it. So I think it's a matter of finding a short we both feel equally excited about, which I think we're getting there.
Yeah.
That's a good instinct because horror is fun. I mean, I'm a fan of horror. You know, people who put down the genre, I think, are just silly, but it's also it's commercial, but it doesn't, but you can do really creative stuff. And
yeah, I mean, we thought of Lucky as at least horror adjacent. Like it had a lot of the horror tropes and horror is like my wheelhouse. That's like what I write solo. So I feel like I was like trying to infuse, try to infuse as much horror as possible. Cause that's what like gets me going. That's what is exciting. Usually I like all things, but you know, horror is like the shit.
It is. And one of the, and I mean, I probably say this a little too often on the podcast, but you know, our 15-year-old, all she'll watch is horror. So I watch a lot of horror with her. And one of the cool things about horror is when someone has a creative take on it and you see something really fresh, that's actually what succeeds. Whereas, you know, very often like a fresh, original comedic idea, people are like, no, I'd rather see Kevin Hart do that thing I've liked before. So
yeah, I think like horror fans are very open-minded as like a group of people watching things. Like they will watch some weird shit and be totally down for it.
Agreed. All right. Well, I'm glad to hear you. I'm glad to hear it. And who knew I would have not guessed you as a horror person?
I know. People say that. There's a darkness in here. It's just massive.
Should not judge books by their covers.
Yeah, I know. I think people would think it was Michael, which you do some horror too, but I'm like the little like horror queen.
Yeah, I'm more on the
like fantasy.
Yeah, fantasy and phantasmagorical stuff.
These things that is a lovely marriage, marrying the horror with the fantastic.
So hopefully whatever we come up with will be a fusion of those. And I think that's, we've got a little short list of maybe three or four ideas that are feeling cohesive and feeling like they could kind of blossom in a couple different directions. So hopefully we'll have a new submission for Sherman Oaks Film Fest brewing hot. So by my editing schedule, 2025, we'll have something new for you.
No major rush on it. No, and then don't rush the process. All right. Well, is there a website or social media stuff that people should check out for you two?
Individually? I'm I don't have a website. I should get one, though. This is a good reminder that that would be a very professional thing for me to do. I do have a Twitter, though. My at on there is SkyTweet, S-K-Y-Y tweet. It's kind of like, if you want to find out anything about me, that's the place to do it. And I think everything else, I mean, I'm on IMDb, but like, who cares? So yeah, just follow me on Twitter. That's all I care about.
And honestly, I think websites, like, I'm shocked when someone has visited the festival website at this point, because all people care about is Instagram and Film Freeway. Like,
yeah, it's like, and like, I use Instagram, but I feel like, especially with film stuff, at least for us, Twitter has been like the spot. Like, that's where we've met a bunch of people. And
yeah, I don't have a very professional social media either, nor do I have a website or even a reel, which, you know, is also not great for an editor, but hey, you know, it's all working. But I'm also on Twitter, all uppercase, at NSA propaganda. You'll know it's me. There's a little picture of a salamander, and it's mostly tweeting about heavy metal. So don't come for hot film takes. Do come for dank memes and song recommendations.
I have film takes on my Twitter, so that they can get a little bit of both if they want them.
Yeah.
That's a pretty rad at NSA propaganda, and then just making it about metal. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, there's a good Hieronymus Bosch photo on there. It's not professional in the slightest. But
see, as far as judging books by their cover, you wouldn't know it. Well, I can't pretend to be a big fan, but I have a secret love for Scandinavian death metal. That like super noisy shit that and I once bonded with a dude in Mexico over it. He was playing some in a booth, and I was like, here, listen to this cover. Anyway.
There's like nothing, from being around Michael all the time, I've learned there's nothing like the bond between like dudes with like long hair that like metal. Everywhere Michael goes, he's like meeting other metal dudes, and they all are like best friends immediately. Doesn't matter what their backgrounds are, anything. It's kind of beautiful.
It's awesome.
It is. And I'm quite jealous, because whenever I meet people who love my favorite bands, there's often like, we look at each other and like, yeah, we got nothing in common. What do you know? But anyway, not LCD, by the way, but this will be the first time I ever say it in a podcast. And this is like podcast 380 or 390, but I'm my number one band is this band King Crimson. And like, every time I meet a Crimson fan, they're like, really?
Oh yeah.
We saw them live.
We saw them at the Greek, like what, last summer, two summers ago, something like that.
Well, then we were sitting not too far apart, my friend.
Oh, hell yeah. Nice.
I dragged my lovely wife to the Greek 3 or 4 times to see Crimson.
There was another woman there. I was joking about that show, because at most concerts, the men's bathroom has like no line, and the women's is so long. At King Crimson, all the women just stroll right in, and the men's bathroom is lined up like a mile.
It's not a good ratio.
Yeah.
It's not a good ratio. And yet it's every year it was getting a little better.
Yeah, I mean, it was a great show. I had a really fun time. Actually, didn't Aaron go with us too?
Yeah.
Our DP went to this show as well.
Yeah.
Well, fuck, I'm about to, I should wait till we stop recording, but I'm just going to say it, because why not? This is a podcast, should be self-indulgent. You must have missed it, but do you know what played at the Sherman Oaks Film Festival last year in 2022?
The King
Crimson documentary, In the Court of the Crimson King.
God, I think we were out of town.
The LA, you know, it premiered at South by Southwest. Mm-hmm. And then I saw Robert Fripp's, you know, social media was like promoted it. And there was a website to go to see where you could find it in the theater. And it was not only in no theaters in LA, it was in no theaters in California. So I contacted the distributor and I'm like, can we show it at Sherman Oaks Film Festival? And they said yes. So
that's
the only theater ever probably to have In the Court of the Crimson King, the 50th anniversary Crimson doc, was Sherman Oaks Film Festival.
That is wild. I can't, we were out of town. Yeah. We were back east for this year's, or well, last year's festival. But I remember seeing all the promotion for it on Instagram and feeling very nostalgic and jealous of all the people in LA getting to go. And now I'm more jealous because that sounds awesome.
It was funny thing is, great documentary, but I walked out of that documentary saying, man, I hope they just use this era of streaming to take all the unedited interviews and just show them. Cause there were some band members, you know, from the 70s where they'd show like, you know, 90 seconds. And I want to see like that half hour. I just want to see how crazy these dudes are now.
Probably Barry.
Anyway. All right. Very dangerous territory. I could obviously talk about this band forever. So I promise that in the show notes for this podcast, Skylar and Michael's both your Twitter handles will be clickable links, so people can go straight to your Twitter from whatever podcast app they're listening this to in, or if they're even on the Discovery Indie Film website. So that's my transition. I'll wrap this up. If you want to learn more about this podcast or there's the Discovery Indie Film podcast and the Discover Indie Film TV series on Amazon Prime Video. Just go to discoverindiefilm.com to learn more. Oh yeah, like and subscribe, and go to Amazon Prime Video on a big ass TV. Don't watch cinema on your phone if you can avoid it, even if you're under 20. I really kills me when our 15-year-old watches Netflix on her phone in a room with a 65-inch TV. I'm like, turn on the TV, please. Anyway, get off that soapbox, finish the podcast. All right. So just go to Amazon Prime Video on a nice big TV, type in Discover Indie Film in the search field, and currently there's 7 seasons of short films handpicked from the festival circuit. Season 8 is coming, and it's all dance films, and then there's already films lined up for season 9. Maybe I'll be able to get lucky in there. We'll find out. But so that's discoverindiefilm.com, and it's at DIFWINS on... Well, I was going to say all the social media platforms, but just Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. There is no TikTok. Do I have to do TikTok? I don't know. Yes. Yes, you said yes.
I said not yet.
Not yet. That's right. All right. And Skylar and Michael said such kind things about the Sherman Oaks Film Festival. If you want to learn about that festival, just go to ShermanOaksFF.com, and it's at ShermanOaksFF on social media. And we hold that one every November. Every June, we hold Film Invasion Los Angeles. They are essentially the same festivals from the same team with different names, 5.5 months apart. So if you want to learn about that festival, it's every June. Go to filminvasionla.com, and it's at filminvasionla on social media. And at the top, I mentioned Hi TV and how lucky is on Hi TV. I can promise you, with or without marijuana, all the films on Hi TV kick serious ass. And with marijuana, they kick incredibly serious ass. And so just go to watchhitv.com if you want to sign up for this streaming service for $4.20 a month. Or if you go to, you know, an app store, it's $4.99. The app stores don't let you charge $4.20. You know, they're close-minded. But anyway, it's on Roku, Amazon Fire TV, Apple TV, Android TV, iPhone, and Android Mobile. So pretty much every platform except Xbox. I think we got to add Xbox for year 2. Hopefully we'll get enough subscribers that I can justify. Because I feel like there's enough people who actually watch streaming on their Xbox. Well, they play video games high, and then it just makes sense to have high TV on their Xbox, right?
I think so.
And Skylar, I'm laughing at myself because I was about to talk about weed some more, but I think I did my soapbox in the beginning that I'm not encouraging irresponsible drug use. I'm an old man. I'm in my mid-50s. I take stuff seriously, but if you can enjoy marijuana in a responsible way, nothing's better than great music and or great film when you're high. So that's what Hi TV is for. And there's actually some amazing music videos with great music on there. So I will shut the fuck up and thanks, Skylar Martin and Michael Hubel. Thank you both for doing this.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much. We had a great time.
Thank you. I did too. And thank you, everyone, for listening.